Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, and live from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, the sun and fun capital of the world, where it was a little chilly today. This is ScaryCast, and I'm Dr. John Stamey, one of your hosts, and we've got a lot of fun coming at you tonight. We've got we've actually got several people listening in, several potential guests that are going to be hopefully going to be on the show in the next several weeks. So we want to give a shout out to them. I think we have one in Delaware, and we got a couple more just listening in, which is great. And tonight our panelists include the Surgeon General of ScaryCast, Dr. Trey Donaway. How are you, Dr. Trey?
I'm great, John. We just finished up a week of Revolutionary War reenactment activities. We had a really big, successful reenactment in Camden, South Carolina, where two Revolutionary War battles were fought. And we had a great evening, great week this week, starting off last Friday and closing on Sunday. We had thousands of people visit and learn about the American Revolution and the importance of South Carolina in that struggle, which was kind of put aside by the history books that were written by the winning team on the Civil War, the North. And only now is the Southern contributions of patriotism and sacrifice coming to light. So it was a very good weekend.
That is marvelous.
Tired.
Now, did you see my favorite ghost from Camden, Alice of Glasgow? Did she show up?
No, we did not see Alice.
Agnes. Agnes of Glasgow.
Agnes of Glasgow, yes.
Yeah,
Agnes of Glasgow.
She'll come home if I don't get her name right.
No,
yeah.
I didn't see Alice at all. Maybe she was there though, and I just didn't see her. But I did not detect her either. So I didn't.
Yeah,
see her.
I think she's more located across the street from historical Camden, in one of those graves. And
that's her resting place. But who knows where she actually is this evening?
Well, that is true. I felt some really weird vibes. There's a fine storyteller. He's a local guy, and his name is Rusty. You know, I believe you know. Yeah, what a great guy.
Yeah.
He introduced me to Agnes and showed me where the grave was, and I got cold chills running up and down. I did. I mean, and the temperature dropped about 10 degrees when I walked in that area. I mean, it's for real.
Well, already today the temperatures dropped about 20 degrees, but I don't think it's the same kind of temperature change you're talking about.
No, it was in the middle of the summer, and I walked over there, and boom, the temperature was 10 degrees colder right around there, and right where Agnes of Glasgow is, and so she's got a great story. We'll talk about Agnes in a subsequent episode. How about that?
Well, maybe we can get Rusty to come on the show, and he can relate the story directly to the audience.
Oh, heck, I'd love to have Rusty on here because he knows some other ghost stories, too, and I think he'd be a blast.
Would you like me to make that happen, John?
Absolutely. I'd love to have Rusty on the show.
I'll talk to Rusty about being on the show.
Okay, great. That's wonderful. It's so good to have you over there in Camden. Camden is truly, ladies and gentlemen, one of the most haunted towns in South Carolina. I mean, a lot of people died over there in the course of
John, it's
the Revolutionary.
John, it's the oldest town in inland South Carolina. Originally chartered in the 1730s. Now, they made a map that said this is Camden. Actually, there was just swamp. It really wasn't much of a town. But it was, it came into its own when Joseph Kershaw in the 1758 came to Camden to open up a branch store of a store from a mercantile from Charleston. And from there, it became a hotbed of Patriot intrigue, overrun by the British when they took over South Carolina. But yet, eventually the British did leave, and we won a country. I talked to somebody the other day from the North. No offense to Northerners. I indeed have Southern heritage, but I'm considered a Yankee here because I spent most of my time in the Navy with my family. And someone was sniffing, and they were saying the Southern campaigns of the American Revolution. And the response, of course, is, well, they said, why don't you talk about where the battles were actually fought? And says, well, he was unaware that so many battles were fought in South Carolina. And I just said, well, it's nice to know in New England you have where a lot of revolutionary battles were fought. But the revolution was won in the South. So if that didn't happen, you'd be speaking with a British accent today. He didn't appreciate it, but it was the truth. Sometimes the truth hurts.
Okay. Well, I got one more piece of truth about Camden that I want to make sure everybody knows. One of the most phenomenal golf courses in the world is located in Camden. It's Camden Country Club. And it hosts, it has the world record for the longest running PGA tournament in the world. The Men's Carolina Four Ball Championship has been run there since 1937. And because of the fact that the Masters was not run for 3 years during World War II, Camden Country Club has the longest running PGA certified championship in the world, and it's and what a great course. Used to be a member back when my back would allow me to play golf. But anyway, just a little plug for Camden.
People talk about the golf courses in Camden and Pinehurst and North Carolina, and we have such a high preponderance of golf courses, and people say, why? Well, the truth is that it was built in the sand hills of the Carolinas, so when it rains cats and dogs, as it will in the summer, when it rains heavily, the next day, next hour or two, you can go out and play golf, as long as it's not raining, because the sand soil absorbs the water, does not leave puddles, and creates a perfect golf course, which is the same reason the Battle of Camden reenactment is so popular with reenactors, because even if it rains, it doesn't leave puddles.
That's great to know.
Little known fact. Little known fact about the Carolinas, but enough about Camden.
Yep. All right. Well, anyway, glad to have you here. We have our man from West Hollywood, Devin Tate. How are you doing tonight, Devin?
I'm doing really good. I just got back from a little trip to San Diego, California, so that was nice to get away. And then when I was on my way back to L.A., I got the results of the exam I told you all about last week, so I passed. And so I am now a certified leader in place management. So that's my title now has LPM after my name.
Congratulations, that's great. Devin. That's wonderful.
Yeah, congratulations. That's really cool. We're glad to have you here.
Thank you.
And we're glad to have such a distinguished group here. It keeps getting more distinguished. Let's see. So you three, Robin is under the weather. She will be back with us. And the Queen of the Bigfoot, Robin. In fact, that's why we had this show set up, because she is the Queen of the Bigfoot. But that's okay. We're still going to have a great time. And we have a new co-host joining us, our YouTube producer, the one from Niagara Falls, Canada. I mean, we are as international as we can get now, Mark Johnson. How are you doing tonight, Mark?
Hey, John. Hey, guys. I'm doing great. It's good to be back on your show, and it's always a pleasure talking with you, John.
Yeah, it's great. We're glad to have you. You like everybody else. We got a talented group of co-hosts that listen carefully, and that's why we have such a good time. And so everybody out there in Radio Land, I hope you enjoy tonight's show, because we are going to talk about Bigfoot experiencers. And that's, I think, a very important thing. You know, experiencers come with UFOs, they come with ghosts, they come with Bigfoot, cryptids in general. I mean, you're talking about Camden, Trey. Camden is right, well, it's right in the middle of the area that the lizard man was seen in 1987 and 1988. And there's a big bad story about lizard man right around exit 96. And I might just share that with you since we talked a little bit about Camden. And, you know, we're talking about Bigfoot, but we might talk about his cousin, the Lizard Man, just a little bit, because we had the Lizard Man Festival, almost a month ago, and in its new home at Owens Park in Columbia, South Carolina. And what a great place to have a festival, and it was a lot of fun. I saw a lot of my old friends came out to vend and everything. So anyway, tonight, now we have got a special guest. I got a phone call, I don't know, about a week and a half, something like a week and a half ago. And this fellow named Gary. And Gary had a Bigfoot experiencer story. He was referred to me by Mark Kilgore, who is the director of Bays Mountain Park. And I thought it was so cool that Mark referred Gary to us. So I'm going to let Gary kick it off. And then, Gary, after you tell your story and after we have any comments, I'd love for you to stay on here and make comments about some of these other stories, if you have the time, okay?
Yes, sir, no problem.
Well, we're glad to have you here. This is Gary from Colburn, Virginia. And why don't you tell us your story? It's a very interesting story because I believe this. I absolutely believe this story.
Well, my story begins, it was in 1999, and me and a friend of mine, as a female, we was out riding around one night, and we decided to go to the Guest River Gorge, which is located in Coburn. And we was out there, we was the only one sitting in the parking lot that night. We was just sitting out there, we was listening to the radio, and just, actually, we was bored, to be honest with you. And, I said to her, I said, hey, I said, how about we get out and let's go walk down through the tunnel and we'll go sit out on the trestle out there because it's an old railroad bed is what it is. And I'm sorry about this, a scenic walk out of it, if you will. And, she said, well, that'd be fine. And it was a summer night, very warm summer night, very clear, no full moon or anything. Actually, wasn't no moon at all. And so we started down the small path, the little small trail, to the main trail that goes to the gorge. And we got on the main trail, and we started toward the tunnel, and we seen what we thought was a stump that had rolled off the embankment above us there down onto the railroad bed. And I said, we'll just walk around here because it's pretty good size. And, well, we got a little closer and the stump started moving. And it was in a squatting position, and it stood up, and on its way, as it was standing up, it turned its head and looked at us, and the yellow eyes, the yellow-orange eyes, was just, I mean, the cold chills, the fear, and the very words that come out of my friend's mouth, she said, what in the hell is that? And I said, I have no idea. And I had carried a little knife on my side of my belt, and I reached my left-hand pocket to get my keys out and pulled my knife out, and I said, let's back up real slow. And I'm 6'2", and this thing was probably probably a foot, foot and a half, maybe 2 feet taller than I was. The eyes is what really got me. It was just that orange yellowish eyes is what really got my attention right there. It didn't grow.
Gary, I got a couple questions for you. Number one, how close were you to that creature?
Very close. Very close.
I mean, like
we were probably
10 feet.
We were probably 15, 20 feet.
That's pretty darn close. Now,
that was very
and
close.
Was there? And what time of the night, Gary, was this?
This was probably around 12-ish, somewhere in through there, maybe 1:30 in the morning.
Was there ambient light? How could you tell the eyes were the color they were?
Because they were glowing.
They were glowing. Okay.
They were glowing. It was like when you put a light on a deer's eyes. You know how they glow. Well, there were no lights out there where we're at because it's really dark out there. The eyes was glowing orange, yellow.
So on their own, it wasn't reflected.
No, sir. We had no flashlight, no nothing.
Gotcha.
And, you know, we started backing up, and the thing, it did not growl, grunt, or anything. It just turned around, and it started walking toward the tunnel. And the backside of that thing, I could tell, I mean, it was, from what I could guesstimate, it was probably about 3.5-4 feet across the back, I guess. I don't know, give or take. Very big, whatever it was.
Standard garden variety Bigfoot, which sounds like what you saw, and it just quietly walked away, huh?
Yes, sir. It did. Like I said, it was we thought it was a stump and it rolled off the embankment above us there, you know. And I don't know, man. It was just really – we never expected that. We never expected that at all. Really, really wild experience. And a very frightening experience.
Now, you told me, I believe, that you brought your son out to see that particular location, didn't you?
Yes, sir, I sure did. I took him out to the location probably the summer before. He wanted to see where this happened at, and I took him out there, and I said, you know, we was in the park a lot, and I said, now, son, I said, now, when we go down there, I'm going to show you, and I really want to show you and then get out of there. I said, I don't want to be down there long. And so I did so. I took him down there, and it was just a very, very uneasy feeling. I just didn't want to be there. And, you know, it was just very, very scary for me to go back down there, and I don't even go to that place anymore.
Okay. And about how many miles would you say it was from that location to Colburn?
Probably about 3-4 miles maybe. Just guessing, about 3 miles.
Okay. All right. Well,
Gary, was it a full moon, or did you have if you saw a stump,
no, sir.
Could you tell it was a stump in the dark?
Because the way it was right there, the trees at that time was cleared over. They just had made that area out there. They just had finished it not long. It probably 95, I think it was. And there were no limbs or nothing across the trail or nothing going across the trail. And I've had walked that trail many a time.
Mm-hmm.
And you could just see, I mean, it was like, I don't know, it was just there. I mean, you know, she seen it and I seen it. I said, well, we'll just walk around it. And when we got a little closer, it started moving.
Gary,
yeah, that'd be
unnerving.
Craig
was really asking, was the light source that lets you see it?
Well, like I say, it was very clear that night. And again, there were no moon out whatsoever, no full moon, no half moon, no moon whatsoever. And the sky was very clear, and like I say again, at that time there were no branches or nothing like that over that trail, which they are planting now. And when the thing started moving and it started, I mean, she seen it, you know, she seen it and I seen it too, you know, and I said, you know, what in the world is going on here? What is this? You know, and and I have no idea. We backed up real slow and we got out of there. And when I got to my vehicle, I was trying to get my keys in the lock of the door, and I was having a very hard time doing that because, like I say, it was dark, and I was shaking pretty bad. And when we did get in, man, we was gone. We was out of there.
Gary, did it make any noise? Were there any sounds associated with it?
No, sir. Hey. No, sir. Absolutely not. Did not make the first sound. Like I said earlier, it did not grunt. It didn't growl. It just stood up. It started standing up, and then it turned its head, and them eyes. The eyes is what I'll never forget.
And did it have clothing on, or was it naked, or...
It was like it was black. I mean, the only thing I could see was a black silhouette, if you will. And the eyes, I mean, like I say, the eyes is what I remember most of all. And from what I told you earlier, from what I could gather just looking at it, from when it turned around as we was backing up, as we was trying to back up, because we never took our eyes off of it till we got to the little trail, which we came down onto the main trail. And
right.
And from what I could gather across the back, like I say, it's probably, it looked to me about 4 foot across the back. You know how the dark play trick on your eyes. I mean, you know, give or take a little. That's what it looked like to me. But there was no one else in that. When you saw it, you saw
an outline, and it was dark, as if it was a shadow. You couldn't see details of its surface.
Well, you just had to be there. It wasn't no shadow. Like, I mean, you could.
No, but it was black like a shadow.
It's kind of hard to explain. Really, you just had to be there to experience it. It was just, I mean, you could see some of it right there, you know, and then the other times you couldn't make out nothing. You could just see something moving when it turned to walk toward this tunnel.
I think that encounter would be certainly a little distracting. I think I'd probably head back the way I came also.
Well, we did. When we backed up to the path that we come down on the main trail on, man, we shot out there like a bullet.
I have a question. When you saw it move, I imagine like a silhouette, did it look like it was moving like any type of, like a hominid would? Or like, did you see any like specific like... walking or shape of something standing upright walking?
You know, like we talked about this sometime, a few days later, you know, I had the girl that I was with, I talked to her again. I said, you know, I said, that thing, whatever that was, it did not make a sound. I said, and like I say, it looked like it was in a squatting position and looked like a stump, or we thought it was a stump rather. And I said, I wonder why it didn't make a sound, whatever it was. I mean, if it was, could it have been sick? Could it have been, I mean, could it have been a female? Could it have been pregnant or something? I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't know, guys. I don't know. I'm just telling you my story. I have no idea. But you could when it stood up and turned its head, you know, that's when we started backing up, you know, and when we started backing up, it turned and started walking towards this tunnel. But it did not make no sounds whatsoever.
Yeah, but when it was walking, did you notice it was like upright walking as if like a humanoid would be, or was it like kind of like too dark to tell?
No. It was walking upright.
Okay.
That's what I was telling you, you know, on the back side of it, its back, its shoulders, you know, how wide it was. I mean, it was walking. It was not no bear. It was not no, some people told me it was a hoot owl on a limb. Well, you know, that's a good theory. You know, yellow eyes and a hoot owl, you know, that's a good theory. But, you know, that's there was no branches that a hoot owl could sit on at that time.
So what was the approximate size, like height-wise, would you estimate?
I'm guessing, like I say, I'm 6'2". It was probably, it's probably 7.5 foot.
Wow. Yeah, I believe that's a Bigfoot, probably, most likely.
Well, I don't know. I have no idea. Like I say, guys, I've never run into anything like that in my life. I've been in these mountains all my life, and I've never seen anything out of the ordinary, but you know, that particular night, it was definitely a wild experience.
Gary, did you do you know of anyone else that's seen anything even remotely like what you saw in that area?
No, I tell you why. I mean, you know how it is when you tell people these stories, you know, something that's really happened to you, you know, and you try to tell people such as this story here that I'm telling you guys, you try to tell them and they're like, yeah, sure, man, you know, whatever, whatever, dude. What was you on? What was you smoking? What was you drinking? You know, I mean.
Right. Since how long did it take you to actually let people know what you saw?
It probably was within, I don't know, it was probably within a month. I was telling some of my buddies, and you know, they, you know, and that's when they were saying, you know, like, yeah, man, you should not go out there drinking or small smoked up or anything. And I'm like, you know, that's fine, dude. You don't believe me? Don't believe me.
But by the same token, it wasn't just yours. It was you had a witness.
Yeah, I know. I know. And that's I don't know, around here, just the people are like, I don't know. It's just you tell stories like that, man, and they're like, yeah, you know, whatever, dude, whatever. And I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to mention, have you checked and see if there's any, like, other stories of similar things happening in your area? Like, if you Googled, like, your region and Bigfoot, like, maybe some other stories
that
come up?
Yes, I sure have. Yep. Yes, sir, I sure have. And I have not come across anything as of yet. And, I mean, I don't know, guys. I have no idea what that was. I don't know. But I know it was big, and it was walking.
And it definitely wasn't a stump.
It definitely
absolutely
was no stump.
Positively, see, was not a stump.
Yeah, positively was no stump. See, this area we were at, it's you know, it's a heavily wooded area. And you know, and you never know, it comes good, you know, real good downpour, something may wash off the bank right there, because the banks out through there are sort of kind of pretty steep, you know. And
sure.
That's what we thought it was. The rain had may have washed the stump off, you know, out of the ground, you know, and that's what we thought it was. And boy, do we ever get fooled.
Gary, that sounds like a great encounter.
It does.
Yeah,
now, Gary, could you detect any kind of facial expression on the creature or not?
I could not, be honest with you. I could not. The only thing I know that, like I said earlier, the eyes. And, you know, when you're in this predicament, you know, it seems like just time all of a sudden just freezes up on you. You know what I'm saying? Just like it, like we was trying to get out of there. And it's like it took, at the time, like it took us forever to get out. But, you know, and then when I'm telling this story to you guys, you know, it seems like, you know, it just happened for two or three minutes or something like that, and we were out there.
Right. Now
it's
Devin,
interesting you mentioned.
Are you still with us, Devin?
I am. I was actually wondering, Gary, was there any, did you notice anything else, like any smell, a strong odor, or anything maybe like, how do I say, like sort of extra sensory?
You mean like an old wet dog or something?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, buddy, I tell you, no, I've been asked that question too. No, I did not because, buddy, we were scared. I was 35 years old at the time. That happened 21 years ago. I'm 56 now. It happened 21 years ago, and I'm going to tell you, we were scared. I didn't pay no attention to the smell around us or anything. We didn't smell, as far as I know, we didn't smell anything going down to the trail on the way, you know, when we was initially going to get on the trail. And, no, I mean, I couldn't tell you if we did or not. I don't know. I know I don't recall it.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I was just curious because I know sometimes, you know, people report a smell that goes along with a sighting like that.
Go ahead.
Was this a date you were on?
Yeah, we sure was. Yeah, we was dating at the time.
How did the date go after that? Would she go out with you again, walking in the woods, or was that like the end of I'm walking with Gary in the woods time?
No. We continue to go out with each other and stuff, but I tell you, that date, it went very quick. We went straight home. I know she was so scared. She was when she got in the vehicle, she was literally shaking.
Well, I don't know what I hear is you pretty much told what you saw. It doesn't sound like you're exaggerating anything. It doesn't sound like you're adding details. Even when he asked a specific question, it'd be easy to say, oh, yeah, it was shaggy and all. But no, you're telling exactly what you saw. And it wasn't you haven't sensationalized it. You haven't, you haven't written a book about it. You haven't, I mean, you had a normal human reaction with, if I tell my friends this, they're going to think I'm crazy. That's the reaction
right.
I think most people would have, because it's just so out of the ordinary. It's even hard to describe your experience in a way that other people won't think you're nuts. So I think that's a credible sighting.
See, that's what my sister thought, you know, because this trail, she used to walk it all the time, you know, for day in and day out, she used to walk it. And I told her my story, and she's like,
what did she say? I've been on that trail a million times, and I never saw that?
Exactly right. Exactly right. She said, Bub.
Yeah.
She said, come on, dude. This is her very words. She calls me Bub. She said, now, Bub, come on, man. I mean, are you for real? And the one thing that we got going between me and her is how we can tell one another to tell them the truth. And that is saying, do you give your right hand to the good Lord above that you're telling the truth? And I told her that. And I said, yes, I do, Stis. I'm telling you the God's truth that I see, that we seen that out there that night.
Well,
and
I think the answer to that, I think the answer to that kind of thing is yeah, you've never seen it before until you do. And then once you have,
If somebody else, you know, such as some of my friends right there, you know, if they want to see something like that right there, you know, until they do see, it's a different ball game, pal, I'm telling you. Whole different ball game, I'm telling you. And, you know, like I told you guys earlier, I've been in these woods, you know, all my life here, you know, ever since I was old enough to go out and get in them. And I had never seen nothing, you know, nothing out of the ordinary until this particular night. And me personally, I am never going back down there ever again.
Don't blame you, buddy. I don't blame you at all.
Well, that's a, you know, Gary, that's,
a really good story. And we've enjoyed talking to you about this story.
It's a story, but it's a true story, I assure you.
Okay. Well, I believe it. I believe that story. I think it's a good story. Mark Johnson, you told us a story. You told it last week, but I like the story so much. I'd like for you to tell your story from British Columbia.
Okay, well, it's similar, actually pretty similar to what Gary experienced, where I came across something that didn't get a good, necessarily enough detail to see, like, conclusively what it was. But nonetheless, I think it's something that is unexplained. So here it is. I was out hiking and camping on this mountain with a few of my friends. And the next day, we decided to go on the opposite side of the mountain and explore a copper mine cave, which the area was known for, the history, like copper mining in that area. So we explored this old cave and went to the end of it, walked in it, and walked out. And on the way out, there was a shaft that kind of went straight into the ceiling, right? Like just went straight up. And up in there, it's near close to the entrance, so there was still kind of a, you could still kind of see in it, although it wasn't like well lit, you could still make out things up there, right? And upon looking up, like way up there, like 15 feet, we noticed that there was a large animal in there. And by large, I mean like it had to be 300, 400 pounds plus, like just a big like mass, just a large mass that was up there that looked like its back was towards us. Like it looked like it was in the fetal position with its back towards us. And so the three of us are looking up there, and first, obviously, our first instinct is that it's a bear because that's, you know, there's grizzly bears in that area, and there's black bears, there's large mountain lions, there's, you know, all types of animals, right? So we're always aware of this type of thing, and we've all experienced these things. So that was our first instinct of it. But we looked up, we inspected it, but didn't say anything. We kind of just backed out because, you know, we didn't want to startle it or anything, so we just backed out. But then, like, 30 minutes later, we're walking away. We're like, okay, so what the hell was that? Because we're all very well aware of what bears are, spotting bears. I've spotted bears in the middle of the night. You know exactly, like, black bears, the type of, like, bristly fur they have. And it was the characteristics of whatever this was did not match with bear and or mountain lion. Mountain lion, we're very familiar with. The look of it, the type of fur it has. This fur or hair that was on it was very long and very, like, it was almost like a surfer dirty blonde hair that was long that covered the whole body. And so that's very wispy and nothing like what a bear's would be. And as well as the shape of this cave and the shaft that went up, it would have been difficult or impossible for any animal I know to get up there like that. Like just the where it was located and just a sheer like wall that was very smooth. Like there's nothing that could be used to climb up there, even like animals. I couldn't expect a bear getting up there anyway. And so on the way out, we're talking and me and my friends, and we're like, yeah, so what was that? Like it had to have been something. And all three of us came to the conclusion that it had to have been Bigfoot or something unexplained because, it just did not meet the characteristics of anything that we're familiar with in that area. And the one other thing I mentioned, that I didn't mention last week about the whole experience, is that we felt like we were kind of, and this is kind of a strange aspect, but I'll say it anyway, we almost felt like we were it was very too calm through the whole experience. And I'm just throwing it out there. I'm wondering if there's any type of maybe, you know, telepathic aspect to them, which makes them more easily avoided. Like, are they able to calm us or redirect our minds or something? I don't know. I'm just throwing that out there because we were all so particularly calm during this whole thing when we thought it was a bear experience. Like, if it a normal bear experience, usually you're on like fight or flight mechanism, right? And you're ready to go. But in hindsight of it all, which we're all, me and my friends can still talk to about this day, is it was just some really unusually, we were all unusually really calm about the whole thing, which was kind of strange. So I don't know. That's it. It's a bit of ambiguous still. Like, all we saw was a big, large mass, 300 pounds plus, fetal position, it looked like. We didn't see any characteristics of, like, a Bigfoot face or anything. But just through process of, like, deduction, it's like there's nothing else that it could explain what it could be up there like that I can think of anyway. So, that's that story.
You know, I think you're right. When you see things, we live in South Carolina. We live in an area that's not really populated. It has lots of houses around the lake, but beyond the lake, there's not a lot going on. And I was driving in the car, and I saw a panther. And I only caught a glimpse of it, but certainly there are panthers. There still are panthers here, Carolina panthers, so it is panthers. I've never seen a panther here before. I've never seen a panther in the wild, but you know, you watch television, and you know how a cat moves, and it wasn't a house cat, and it was bigger than a bobcat, certainly. It was, as far as I'm concerned, it was a panther. I only caught a glimpse of it, but your brain knows what you're seeing if it's seen it before. So if you see something, and you're used to walking around in the wild, and you kind of know, your mind has a picture of images that you're expecting. And if it falls in those expected categories, then you'll say, oh, it was a bear or a mountain lion or whatever. But when you see something that just confuses your brain and you say, it wasn't this, it wasn't this, it wasn't this, that's a significant thing going on.
Yeah, and what was interesting is, you know, after this experience, it really opened my mind and up to, like, this as a possibility. Before, I didn't take Bigfoots too seriously, but after this, I did research about it in the area, and I talked to some of my friends whose families go way back there and part of the Native community there, and sure enough, it's very common. There's, like, a folklore there about the Natives. It's part of their, like, stories about that there are other wild men in the woods and this type of thing. They have their own name for and everything, but they're pretty you know, I think it's past a few generations, and new generations maybe don't know so much about it, but I think it's some things that have been passed down through the generations there as far as the folklore of what's going on in the woods. So there's a history of that there. There's kind of a cultural element there, too, that kind of some major Bigfoot documentaries. The name doesn't come to me now, but it was filmed about 20 minutes away from where I was. So it's like it's known for being a highly active area for that Bigfoot in Rocky Mountains there.
Dr. John, who was,
yes, sir,
who was our guest? It was a Native American woman, and she was tuned into this. She explained in her Native American heritage and how it all blended together. I cannot remember her name. She was from, it was North. I know she was in the North.
She was
might
from
even
Toronto.
Be Canada.
And her name
Toronto,
was Robin.
Yes.
Sweet lady. We need
but
to have
her
back.
Not our Robin in South Carolina. This is a different Robin.
Yeah, just a different Robin.
Yes.
She's a sweet
yes.
lady. I haven't talked to her in too long. That's a good reason to go shoot her a message tonight and say, hey, Robin, how you doing? But no, that's, lots of interesting things happen. I've got, I think, a very telling story. This is not in any of my books, and I've just never put it in there. I went to see my buddy Will Rodriguez because I saw on Facebook it was his birthday, and I was heading down to Clayton, Georgia, to see somebody at the chamber, and I was trying to work on the Georgia Bigfoot Conference. So I just thought I would surprise Will and go and say happy birthday. So I went over there, and he had a buddy of his. They were sitting at the table talking, and I walked in. I said, happy birthday, Will. He said, wow, thank you very much. I said, yeah, I saw on Facebook that it was your birthday, and so I just came, you know, just thought I'd drop by and say hello. So he said, thank you, and we talked for a while. And then I said, well, I'll tell you what, I've got to get going because I've got stuff to do, but I'd like to just hang out. He has an Airbnb. He's got a cabin that he built. And I stay in that cabin sometimes. He gives me a good rate. So I just went up there to the cabin, I was sitting in a chair. It was, well, no, I was standing. I was standing because it was a cold. It was a cold, rainy day. It was what I would call a dark and stormy day. It was a little bit of wind, a little bit of precipitation, kind of foggy, kind of, you know, whatever. He lives on a one-lane dirt road, all right? And so I'm just standing there enjoying the nature. And so I'm looking across the street, and about 100 feet from him across the street is another house. And by the way, these are those, I'll get to the hog pipe later. But anyway, so it's about 100 feet on the other side of the road is another house. And I said, you know, so it's actually, you know, kind of fairly populated. And I'm standing there, and I see a gigantic piece of bark. It was kind of close to square, but I saw this gigantic piece of bark. It was about at level with me, you know, in terms of how high up it was. And something propelled that thing about 50 feet in the air over a pine tree, and it came crashing down. And, of course, I looked, and I wasn't – I've had experiences with Bigfoot up there. I wasn't going to go check it all out, but, I mean, so something – propelled this gigantic, it was probably 3 feet by 4 feet, all the way up about 50 feet, and it came crashing down, made a big noise in the woods, about 100, maybe 75 feet from me. And I realized that I had just seen a Bigfoot. Bigfoot, as Robin will tell you, they are smart. Now, if a Bigfoot up there wanted to come by and just say, "Hello, John," I'm going to tell you that if I saw a Bigfoot walking down that road toward me, I would be close to having a heart attack. I would be so frightened. I'd have been running back into Will's house and boarding up the door. I would have been terrified. So what I realized is that was Bigfoot saying hello to me. I mean, how else would you say hello to somebody that if you walked up on them, you'd scare the hell out of them? So,
John,
you know
I throw
what
big
I did?
Chunks of bark up in the air. I throw big chunks of bark up in the air when I meet somebody too. It's a common welcome sign. It's universally accepted. The problem is if you're like in a place where there's no bark, then it gets a little awkward. But yeah,
right.
I think that is so curious.
And so what I did was I knew instinctively to just wave. I said, "Hey there." Got in my car and left. I didn't want any more. I didn't want any more of that.
Stick around for prolonging that conversation, huh?
No, I didn't, because I had the most harrowing experience of my life in that little cabin. And I'll spend that time when Robin's around, because Robin, apparently 7 o'clock in the morning, I called her up to tell her about it. She said, "Oh, I hear you had an experience with the Bigfoot last night, didn't you?" I said, "How did
and
you
this
know?"
Is before,
she said, "Oh, John,
and this is before you said anything."
Yeah. I said, "Hey, Robin,
said like
oh, boy,
that.
I heard you had a real experience." Whatever. I don't think she – anyway, it was just – it was harrowing. I mean, I'm in that cabin. I mean, a four-year-old can break into that cabin. He has like a rubber strap that holds the door. All it does is it holds it shut. It's not very secure. And what I heard that night terrified me. I thought I was going to have a stroke or a heart attack. I really did. I mean, it was about too scary for words, that experience. And I just, oh my God, and everything was wrong. The crickets stopped chirping. You know, they don't stop chirping in the middle of the woods. No, they don't. I mean, even if a big cat or something walks by, they're still going to chirp. They're still going to make some noise. So anyway, that's my Bigfoot story, and it was scary.
But now, John, you've seen Bigfoots at Robin's house, have you not?
Yes, I have.
So you're no stranger to Bigfoot. And would you say that the gait or the movement was similar to that of you seen with your other experiences, especially the ones at Robin's house, where you really had a chance to look at them?
When the thing propelled that bark above the tree, I didn't see anything. But something did that.
Right.
And then when I had my experience at the cabin, I heard Bigfoot walking around right outside the cabin. And I was very impressed with how wide the footsteps were that I could hear in the leaf, you know, because it was like fall. And I could hear, you know, something crunching the leaves. And you could tell it was, you know, we have a footstep of maybe a foot and a half, something like that.
Yeah, you go crunch, 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 and this one was like crunch, pause, crunch, pause.
That is exactly correct. And I was terrified. I mean, I didn't know what to do. And it got stopped right in front of the door. And I said, oh, God. I mean, all it had to do was push, and that door was going to come down. So
that
what I did...
That rubber wedge wasn't going to really... That rubber wedge wasn't going to keep him out, you don't think?
Oh, gosh, no. All it did was keep the door closed, you know, because...
So
he
couldn't see how scared you were. That's what it was doing. It was just preventing
him from seeing the terror. I am sure he could sense that. And, I have a lot of respect for Bigfoot and what they can do based on my conversations with Robin. But so what happened was, and I'll tell you exactly what happened. I was sitting on the day bed having a drink because of my long trip. I'd gotten in late. And so I'm sitting there, and I quietly poured me a triple. I looked at my phone and it said 7%, and I said, oh, God, this is bad. This is bad. I said, because my cell phone cord is in the car. I said, oh, my God. And so I poured me that triple, and I quietly reached up and pulled the chain on the combination fan and light, and I sat there in the dark. And I don't remember, and I drank that drink, and I don't remember anything else until about 3 o'clock, and I woke up, and the crickets were chirping again. You know, the regular sounds were there, and I felt so good. But I didn't go out of that place till the sun was up. And I went and got my charge cord. I charged my phone a little bit and called Robin. She said, boy, did I hear you had an adventure last night with the Bigfoot? I said, oh, my God, how did you know? I mean, so anyway.
I really do wish Robin, I hope she feels better. I wish she could have been here because this stuff is right up her alley.
It really is, because especially if she was here, I would tell the full story, and she would recount her phone conversation with me because she has part of this story. She's part of the story, and it's just, you know, whatever. It's great. So, Gary, you're not the only person that's been scared by Bigfoot.
Yeah, sounds like it.
Nope. And I've got several more. I mean,
so you guys think it's what I've seen?
I'm sorry, say that again, Gary.
I said, do you think that's what I've seen? Do you think that's what that was?
That sounds pretty good description. I mean,
undeniable. You saw a Bigfoot.
Yeah. Yeah, see, guys, like I told you, I've never seen anything like that before in my life, and I could just describe it as I saw it. That's the only way I could tell you. That's how I'd describe it as I saw it.
And you sound like the kind of guy who's who's not going to be describing big invisible rabbits and, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
So you sound on the level, and you don't sound whack-a-whacka to me. So I think I'd give you a hell yes on that one.
I really appreciate
Gary,
that.
Gary, there's something in your story that you don't realize, and it is common among Bigfoot, because being with all their experience in the woods, they can move and walk silently. And you have said that. You said it to me about a week and a half ago.
Multiple times.
And you said it.
Multiple times.
That's
you know,
right. And that right there tells me you got a Bigfoot. They can control.
They can control
the, you know, what's going on around them. They can. And it might be he was loud and walking, or she, but they planted in your mind that there was no sound. They can do that. Robin will tell you they can. They can zap you.
They can
put you out.
That's really wild that you should say that, because, you know, when as it was walking off, I don't recall hearing no sound. I really don't.
Right.
Gary, after that encounter, did you feel different, other than, you know, fear and wow, what was that? But did you sleep better or sleep worse, or did you have nightmares, or how were you after that encounter, other than shook from experiencing something that's totally unknown?
Well, I'll tell you, I don't know, because I couldn't explain it. I didn't know what it was. I don't know. I can't honestly answer that. I mean, it was really different.
Did you feel like yourself, or did you feel like changed, different? I don't know how to describe it more.
I guess a little different. A little different.
Mm-hmm. How did you feel? What
interested me about your story was how you reported the eyes lighting up, and that's something that's very common. I've heard in, like, a lot of Bigfoot shows, and I believe I had a conversation with Matt Delf about this once, how the eyes, like some animals have, especially nocturnal ones, have in their eyes that extra membrane that makes it glow. I forget the name of it, but I believe that, like, since a lot of Bigfoot encounters are in the night, I believe that there's a good likelihood that they are nocturnal.
Yeah.
They're able to navigate at night, and so that makes sense. I know I've heard that about a lot of Bigfoot stories, is that these glowing red eyes is a common theme.
Well, guys, like I say, I didn't know what it was. I didn't know if it was, I mean, I didn't know if it's some local drunk had drunk too much or something. You know, I have no idea. You know, I didn't know at the time. You know, I just like, well, it's probably some old drunk or something. But, you know, when that thing, you know, when I seen those eyes, dude, I mean, it was just unreal. I mean, I can't explain to you how they done it, but they were glowing in the dark. I don't know. Orange, yellowish, whatever color they are. And that's one thing that will stick with me for the rest of my days. That's the eyes.
Could you, Gary, this is Dr. John, could you tell if the eyes were indeed circular, if the yellowish thing you saw was circular, or was it like oval, or like pointed at the top and the bottom? Can you tell?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Sure can. They were like oval at the top and like pointed down at the bottom. It's like when you put your forefinger and your thumb together, and you see that little hole that your forefinger and thumb makes. That's exactly what it looked like.
All right. Well, we got that factoid out in the open, so that's good. Well, in the absence of any more stories, I'm going to ask each one of my co-hosts, if you got one last question for Gary or anybody else. I'm going to start with our man in West Hollywood, Devin Tate. You got a question for anybody or a comment?
Well, I guess I was just wondering, kind of, John, because you mentioned that you have that cabin in the woods, so I'm assuming that's a good place to hope to find a Bigfoot experience, maybe.
That is in the middle of two clans of Bigfoot that Robin told me. She said there are two clans that live there. And so, yeah, I would tell if you fly over here, I will take you there. But, I mean, it's going to have to be a Scarycast host or somebody that I know. I cannot divulge where that is because you'll have Bobo and Cliff and the whole bunch out there with guns trying to shoot them up a Bigfoot.
I would love to go there.
Yeah, well, yeah, bring the people over, and we'll drive, and you will swear that I have taken you to the edge of the world. It is remote where that place is. Oh, my Lord, it's remote. And we'll just get in that cabin. We'll get some sleeping bags, and we'll just spend about two nights, and there'll be some activity. You just watch. So, yeah, you are welcome to come over, and any Scarycast host is welcome to come over for this. Gary, you can call me, and you can come too because you're an experiencer. So we like experiencers. You were great. All right. Well, thanks, Devin. But yeah, you got to be careful.
Thank you.
Robin taught me that. Robin's been a good teacher. I mean, I didn't know all this protocol that you had to be careful. She said once you find where the Bigfoot are, you do not tell because you're gonna have guys out there with guns, and they're all gonna want to bag them a Bigfoot. And they can. I mean, you know, shoot enough rounds, you can probably bag one. So anyway, yeah, that's the comment there. But I can take you. I know exactly where it is. I'll never forget how to get to that location. And there's two more locations in and around Clayton, Georgia. There's one near the dam. But I'm not going to say which dam or which lake, but there's one near the dam, and there's a road that goes to a park, a state park. Not much of a park either, I'm going to tell you that. And, I mean, it's just not. It's just like the piece of ground, and they called it, you know, John's Park or whatever. But they're out there. They're just totally out there. And if you go to Kingsport, Tennessee, I can tell you exactly where the Bigfoot are. You'd be shocked if I told you how close they are to Kingsport. It is amazing. And we've got pictures of the tree structures that they built right before the Tennessee Bigfoot Conference 2 years ago, the last one we were able to have because of COVID. And we have stick structures that are absolutely stick structures. We got hundreds of pictures of these. And we asked people, they said, well, they weren't there 2 days ago. They were stunned. So, yeah, they're all over. They really are. Is that you, Devin? Is that enough answer?
Yeah, that sounds great. I look forward to exploring with you someday.
Absolutely. I gotta have more than just me out there. I'll have to start. Okay, Devin, Mark Johnson. Question, comment, whatever.
Yeah, so I was just interested while you guys were talking there. I looked up like eye shine in animals at night, and it says it's produced by a special membrane called tapetum lucidum, which translates to tapestry of light, and it's a reflective surface that is located directly behind the retina. And when the small rays of light in the nighttime, like starlight, enter the eye, they bounce off the membrane, giving the eye a chance to use the light. And for animals, this membrane is like having a built-in flashlight that lights their path. And I know I've seen this at night, like light, like little eyes in the woods, and I've been living in BC. So, yeah, but just from when hearing the story and about Bigfoot in general, I imagine they are nocturnal creatures. They're able to see at night, so it wouldn't surprise me if that's what this is, what he saw in the eyes glowing.
So let me get it straight, Mark. So it's ambient light that is reflected off of this this layer in the eyes of certain animals. So it is So it would appear to be glowing by itself.
Yeah, like I've seen it before myself, and it's like just pure darkness. You can still see little red dots and or little orange ones. I have seen it, this exact same thing. It's just like, you know, you get your picture taken and your eyes go red. It's kind of the same thing,
right,
except at nighttime.
That's from the retina. It's your retinal reflex. I mean, humans have that, animals have that, but this is not from reflected light so much as ambient light from stars or whatever's in the sky that is not a bright light would be visible in the eyes of one of these animals then, which would explain the glow.
Mm-hmm. Huh. Yeah, but just I know that I've heard this, like a lot of the Facebook groups I'm a part of for Bigfoot, it seems to be a common theme, this red glowing of the eyes. And what also seems to be a theme is encounters with Bigfoot at night. So it just like between those two, like my logical conclusion is that they're nocturnal creatures. One reason why we never see them, if they're there alongside us, their stealthiness and their activity is more at night maybe. And then during the daytime, they're just out of sight. I don't know.
Well, you know, I have a friend that put out a game camera, and I mean, it's not like in the woods. And she said she was amazed, just amazed by the wildlife she sees in a suburban community that we don't see in the daytime, because animals can hide very well in the daytime. This is part of their survival mechanism. So, but they're there. Just because you don't see them in the daytime doesn't mean they're not there. And I think that's probably true for other creatures as well that we don't see in the daytime.
Well put, Dr. Trey Donaway, our Surgeon General. Well put. Absolutely. So, all right, Mark, does that take care of your questions?
Yeah, I think so. The other thing that just came to mind while talking to this, maybe you would know, maybe this is a question for you, John, is there any relationship or kind of combination of Bigfoot being seen alongside any UFO activity? Or is there any kind of correlation there?
All the time. All the time. Well, we can do a whole show with Robin on that. Absolutely. So since you're going to be joining the panel, you'll be, as soon as Robin gets well, that is exactly the show we need to do, is Bigfoot and UFOs. I mean, that's just such a great topic.
Yeah, for Robin, it's like hand in glove. I mean, it's just, there's definitely a correlation there.
Yes, Just thinking about it, it's like the fact that we never see them or anything. If they were like hypothetically a ground crew for ET race or who knows, something along those lines, then they might be all chipped and have the ability to be teleported out of there or have cloaking capabilities that are outside our idea of what is real, right? So if like since we never see these things or never find them or they're kind of just outside our realm of perception, but they're there. And if there is this correlation between UFOs, maybe they're just a ground crew for a UFO, and they're just have that genetic qualities to go around foraging for something for the ETs. I don't know, who knows. But that's just something.
Well, again,
not to speak for
Robin, but she will talk about cloaking abilities. So I think that's right. That's right along the line of thought that she's had. So interesting. We need Robin, John. We got to make her better.
Well, I know. I'll call her tomorrow, make sure she's doing okay. She's a sweet lady. And she's a great co-host. All right, Mark, thank you. And then we're going to ask Dr. Trey Donaway for his closing questions. And then Gary gets the last word tonight on ScaryCast. So, Dr. Trey Donaway, our Surgeon General. Any questions,
Gary,
comments?
My question is pretty simple. Knowing what you know now, and it's been 17 years since you saw this? Is that 35, 52? How many years?
That was 21 years ago. I was 35 years old.
Okay. Knowing what you know now, and with that intervening time, Would you like to see another one of these creatures sometime in your lifetime? And if you did, what might you do differently?
Run a little faster. Honest with you, if I was in that predicament again, I hope and pray that I would be in a vehicle. If maybe, you know, run across the road or something, you know, that would be the only way, because I don't want to do, I don't want to have that experience again.
Would you do anything differently? Let's say you are, I mean, do you avoid going into the woods at night now after that experience? So to minimize that, is
area,
something that would happen.
In that particular area, I do not want to go back down there no more.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as going into the woods, just in other locations or whatever, yeah, I'll go into the woods, but I'll be driving, you know, like my vehicle or whatever, but I won't get out and walk. I mean, no.
Well, you know, your behavior has been modified by your experience. And mm-hmm. if you were making all this up, you wouldn't have modified your behavior. So I think it sounds like to me it's a genuine article to me. Thanks for sharing your story, Jerry. I love hearing about it, Gary. It's wonderful.
Yes, thank y'all for having me.
Absolutely. We were glad to have you, and you're welcome back anytime. Now, Gary, do you have any questions for any of our co-hosts or any statements that you want to make? You get the last word tonight.
The guy, him and his friend were out. They thought they seen the big the Bigfoot. What was his name? I can't remember his name.
Mark.
Mark. I meant to ask him a while ago. Did it move or did it do any kind of movement at all?
So it just looked up like, from my memory, it was up in the fetal position, about 15 feet above us, back facing towards us, and it did look like there was a breathing element to it, like it was alive. You could tell that it was something there, organic. It wasn't just, we weren't just looking at like a bunch of, like, I don't know, grass up there or something. Like, you could tell it was like, yeah.
It wasn't a stump either.
Yeah, exactly. It was definitely an organic being that was 300-400 pounds up there.
Wow. Okay. Wow.
But it was more than 300-400 pounds.
Yeah, at least, from what we could see.
Right. All right, well, another one for the record books. Great show, guys. I've got to say congratulations to every single one of you. Devin, congratulations on passing your certification and being the big dude over there at the city of West Hollywood. Trey, congratulations on your Revolutionary War reenactment and just tons of people there, everybody having a great time. Congratulations on that. Mark Johnson,
thank you
very much for getting us up on YouTube. And we're going to start doing some promotion because that's a very important vehicle for us. And so we'll be, because when we were doing Bigfoot and Company, we had a ton of people watching that. In fact, we're going to have Matt Delph on here as soon as he can clear out his schedule. We're going to have him on ScaryCast. So that'll be a lot of fun. And Gary, thank you for being with us. You've been a great guest. And it's been a lot of fun getting to know you and finding out about your story and giving
you
us the opportunity to share some of our stories and all that. So just thanks to everybody. Thanks to the listeners, WLSC AM and FM, Lawrence, Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. And I can now announce officially, excuse me, ScaryCast is the radio sponsor of the Duke's Mayonnaise Bowl on December the 30th at 11:30 a.m. That's when the Duke's Mayonnaise Bowl comes on in Charlotte, North Carolina. And ScaryCast, we're going to be doing some kind of fun promos with each of the each of the co-hosts, so I'll be getting with you for that, so that'll be a lot of fun. Just thanks a lot to Banana Jack Murphy and WLSC AM and FM. They are the exclusive provider of all bowl games in the Myrtle Beach, Florence, Lumberton area in our neck of the woods, and we are so glad that we secured that sponsorship. Thanks a lot to Banana Jack Murphy. Just been a great friend of mine for 25 years, and watching him grow and getting that radio station going. And he started when it was nothing, and boy, it is something now. It's a powerhouse. Has a lot of listeners, and we're just glad to be on the radio midnight on Saturday night. You can check us out on tigerradio.com, where his signal can be heard on the internet, and you can also pick him up in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. So thanks a lot to all of our friends, to all of our co-hosts, and everybody else, and we'll see you next week on the one, the only, and there's only one Scary Cast. Take care, everybody. Have a good one.
Good night, everybody. John. Good night.
Y'all have a good one.
Good night.
Bye-bye.